Welcome, everyone, to the second session of our Programming Idea Lab. If you were here for the first session around a month and a half ago, thank you for coming back. And if this is your first time, we're really excited to have you here as part of this collaborative space. The idea behind the Programming Idea Lab is that we want everyone to have a place to come together to share ideas. That each of us in our own unique communities are doing really important things. We're programming, we're creating learning opportunities, but often there's the need to feel like we're creating something new, something interesting, something exciting. And the truth is that someone else is thinking the exact same thing at the exact same time. So what we're doing here tonight is we are trying to unite everybody who's thinking in their corners of the earth about what to do about a specific holiday, a specific opportunity, bring them together to brainstorm together. So first off, my name is Emma Katz, and I'm the Community Programs Coordinator from the Women's Initiative. I am joined tonight by my colleague, Adina Meyerfeld, who is the Assistant Director and the Leadership Program Coordinator for the Women's Initiative. You may have met her through some leadership training in your communities, through a summit that the Women's Initiative has run. And one of our presenters tonight is Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, who is the Director of Communal Engagement for the OU. So that's a zoomed out version of the Women's Initiative. Rabbi Glasser is in charge of it all. So I am Emma Katz. I do the community programs, and I'm really excited to have you here tonight. For the sake of creating community, I would ask that if you're able to, you can turn on your cameras. It's always nice when we're able to see each other's faces and not just black boxes. And if you could take a moment to write in the chat your name and where you're from, that will give us all a sense of the communities that are represented here tonight. So thank you so much for being here. And in one moment, we're going to get started. Just before we do, I want to give you a heads up about another program that you may be interested in coming up from the Women's Initiative. We have, Adina, do you mind sending Adina the link? We have an opportunity available right now. Nach Yomi, which is one of our flagship programs, just began learning Sefer Tehillim. And as part of the Sefer Tehillim Learning Initiative, we are giving communities the opportunity to create their own meaningful Tehillim program with the opportunity for a grant to be provided by the OU Women's Initiative. So again, you plan an interesting, innovative program connected to Tehillim for your community, and there's the possibility that we will be able to fund part of it. So if you're interested in that, you can check out ouwomen.org/transformTehillim. I'll send it out in the email with the recording from this program, but we would love to see your applications for exciting Tehillim connected programming. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our three speakers for tonight. We are joined tonight by Rabbi Yaakov Glasser, who is the rabbi of the Young Israel of Passaic Clifton and the Director of Communal Engagement for the OU. Thank you so much, Rabbi Glasser, for being here. We are joined by Mrs. Ariana Reich, otherwise known as Mora Ariana, or now that my son's in first grade, she's Mora Reich. Ariana is the assistant principal at JEC in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And we are joined by Mrs. Aliza Joel, who is a mechanechet at an educator and mechanechet at Fuchs Mizrahi in Cleveland, Ohio. So thank you all for being here. And I'm going to turn over the floor for you to introduce. We're going to start off tonight with having you introduce yourselves, what your role is, and the population that you generally focus on in terms of programming. So let's begin with Rabbi Glasser.
Okay, thank you very much. And it is a real honor to be here. Slightly awkward being the only male represented here, but I'm used to that with all the Women's Initiative programming. So it's wonderful to be with you. It's wonderful to take a moment to reflect on these different ideas. So I'm supposed to introduce myself. So I'm Yaakov Glasser, and I have the great chus of serving as the Managing Director for Communal Engagement, which oversees all the different community departments, including the Women's Initiative and many others at the OU. And also for the last 20 years, Our family has been serving the Young Israel of Passaic Clifton here in Passaic, which is a shul that I would describe as like probably a right of center religious Zionist, you know, kind of like YU based Medrash type shul in largely a much more right-wing community. That's a little relevant for some of the context for tonight, for our discussion. And yeah, that's.
Okay, thank you. Aliza, do you want to go next?
Sure. Hi, I'm Aliza Joel, and thank you for having me here. I'm excited to brainstorm with all of you. I have been teaching Tanakh for about 25 years now. I actually see a couple of former students on, so everybody. Right now, I live in Cleveland. We've been here for about 17 years. I serve as the upper school, that's sixth grade through 12th grade Tanakh department chair, and the junior high, sixth through eighth grade Mashgicha Ruchani, where I focus a lot on the spiritual and social emotional well-being of the girls, in addition to teaching Tanakh as well. At our school, the Fuchs Mizrahi School is a modern Orthodox religious Zionist school. We are the only school of that type in our community. I focus primarily and particularly when it comes to programming with the junior high age, those grades 6 through 8. So the kids are about 11 through 14 or so.
Great, and Ariana.
Hi, Ariana Reich. I am the assistant principal in JEC in Elizabeth, New Jersey, also a modern Orthodox Zionistic school. I currently serve as the assistant principal. Previously, I was the programming director and director of Jewish Life and Learning. So currently, I am working with first through fifth graders. But previously, I programmed for early childhood through fifth grade, and previously before that, also junior high, but mostly elementary school right now. I'm excited to be here. I live in Springfield, New Jersey with my family. And thank you so much, Emma.
Okay. So as you see, we have individuals here who focus on different areas of the lifespan, with Rabbi Glasser really thinking about the full lifespan experience, and Aliza and Ariana focusing on more specific age brackets. But I think all are going to be really relevant to our conversation tonight, which is a conversation about the Yoms. Now, when we talked about this in the office, we said, wow, we really need to talk about the Yoms. Because nobody asked us when they were planning the calendar as programming people. Nobody asked us if it was a good idea to declare the State of Israel so soon after Pesach. But it was. So that's when it was, Baruch Hashem. But as a person who works in programming, we know that the minute you hit Purim, it's like nonstop until Elul. It's Purim, then it's Pesach, then it's the Yoms, and it's Sfira. But like, who even knows about Sfira? Lag BaOmer. Shavuos, and before you know it, you're at Rosh Hashanah. It's a very busy time. So what we're going to take a moment to do is right now, before we even get to Purim, we're going to think about the Yoms. So my question to the panel now is, are we on time when you're thinking about Yoms programming? So tonight we're really going to focus on Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaAtzma'ut. When you think about programming for the Yoms, when do you start? What's a good time frame? If someone's really just starting out in programming, are you thinking about this once Pesach's over? What's a good time frame to start thinking about the Yoms? And how do you begin your thought? Are you focusing on all three equally? Each year, are you deciding, do I focus on this Yom this year? This Yom will be next year. How do you begin your thought process? Aliza, I would like you to go first.
Sure. So like you're saying, we like to say in school that once we come back from winter break, the school year is over because there's just so much going on. We just broke out color war today. So we honestly can't even start thinking about the Yoms until after Purim. It happens to be that because we've been doing this for so long, we have certain structures in place and certain frameworks that help us not have to start from the very, very beginning. At that point. And the way that it's structured in our junior high is that most of the Judaic studies staff is part of the programming committee And each chag, a different teacher or staff member is Rosh of that chag, and everybody else is collaborative and comes and helps out in whatever way that's necessary. I would say that for Yom, without getting into specifics, Yom HaShoah, you really do have to be prepared before you go for Pesach, because once you come back from Pesach, Yom HaShoah is just a couple of days later. So that's the one that we really have to think of first. And then we get into more of the nitty gritty of Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut, as soon as we return from Pesach.
Okay. And in terms of focus, you said each.
So each one gets its own focus. I will say in our community, we're blessed with amazing shlichim who really carry a lot of the load for Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. And in particular, in our community, the Fuchs Mizrahi School has a community tekes, a ceremony that leads from Yom HaZikaron into Yom HaAtzmaut. And that is a very, very big affair. That one, they start earlier, before Pesach. They have to in order to get all of the details and coordination done. But if I'm focusing primarily on the junior high elements and what we do in school each of those days, Yom HaAtzmaut is a much longer, it's a whole day of programming. So that takes more focus, I would say more detail oriented. So again, with Yom HaShoah, we talk about it before Pesach and have our plan in place before that. And then we have started generating ideas for Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut before Pesach, but we hit the ground running once we get back.
Okay. Ariana, how does it look at JEC? When are you starting to plan for the Yoms?
Okay. So first of all, I'll say that we definitely do focus on Yom HaShoah, and I can get into more of the specifics when we talk more about Yom HaShoah, but because we're working with elementary school age children, that is less of a big program for us and more focused on the upper elementary school age children, third through fifth grade. So that's a little bit less. We also, I'll say in general that, I don't know, I guess we have a lot of programming people on here. So I think everyone will agree. We love a good theme at JEC. So we like to base a lot of our programming on our school theme for that year. So that being said, we kind of plan the entire year in the summer, thinking ahead, how can we break down this theme? For example, this year, our theme is Power of Words. So how can we break that? How can we implement Power of Words into all of our chagim, our programming for the year? And then around Purim time, as Adar starts rolling in, we start thinking about the yoms like towards the end, coming up to Purim. Yom HaShoah, as I said, is less of a big, I don't want to say less of a big deal, but it's not as big of a program with elementary age students. Yom HaAtzmaut is a full day of programming. It requires a lot of prep and a lot of hands-on work and a lot of people to implement that. And Yom HaZikaron is kind of like our springboard into Yom HaAtzmaut. So we do a program for Yom HaZikaron, but Yom HaAtzmaut really requires a lot of details, programming, a lot of work. So we do start around the end of Adar.
Okay, thank you. And Rabbi Glasser, when are you starting to think about the Yoms?
When do we start to think about the Yoms? Yom HaShoah, we actually have been thinking about earlier, because in a shul, we try to bring a survivor, and that is something that needs attention earlier and earlier in the year, because it's getting harder and harder to find speakers. So that I think we actually already booked that now. That probably started a few weeks ago. And then Yom HaAtzmaut and Yom HaZikaron, I would like to say that we do it more in advance. Again, it's a shul, so we're not working with as many moving parts as these illustrious educators are. You know, we're not managing hundreds and hundreds of kids and classes and different dynamics like that. It's more contained. But yeah, I would say the creative aspects probably. I try to start those conversations before all the Pesach stress starts, so that it gets its own attention before we're all worried about how we're going to eat challah shoes this year, which is a big crisis. So.
Okay, so now let's start to zero in. We have Yom HaShoah, we have Yom HaZikaron, and we have Yom HaAtzmaut. Each has obviously their own observance and their own commemoration. And each also has their own culture, like the culture of bringing in a survivor for Yom HaShoah, whereas Yom HaAtzmaut has become a full day, all-encompassing affair. So we're going to start with Yom HaShoah. And I guess, Rabbi Glasser, you mentioned that you already booked a survivor to speak. I would love for you to speak to what does your Yom HaShoah programming typically look like? And as like a nuance, as unfortunately there are less and less survivors available to speak, how are you navigating that? Are you beginning to reimagine Yom HaShoah? How does that impact the conversation?
Okay, sure. I'll try to also kind of talk about like the underlying thinking in terms of putting this together, because there are so many different types of shuls and there are so many different types of communities that we should be able to learn from each other without being exactly parallel. When I got to the community 20 years ago, there was a community-wide Yom HaShoah program at the time what was called the Y. And it was like an old school classic Yom HaShoah program. It involved like, you know, lots of children walking down an aisle with a Yahrzeit candle and a cello playing and a cantor and a speaker, usually like Halava, you know, a survivor, but also like a major address from some consulate that no one knew existed in New Jersey. And, you know, like a lot of, and the only thing missing from this event was there were no people, like nobody came. It was mostly like the parents of the students that walked down because they had to drop them off. And then, you know, the organizers came. So over time, as the Y closed down in Passaic, as we evolved, as the Y closed down, so I grabbed this event into our shul. And I believe we're the only shul in the community that does a Yom HaShoah program. And I started to like think back, like what are the goals of what we're trying to accomplish on Yom HaShoah? And to me, the main goal right now for the last 10 years and for the foreseeable future, so we can't do it anymore, is to connect as many people as possible, as young as possible and old as possible, to living testimony of the Shoah. That is my mission for Yom HaShoah. And if I've accomplished that, then I feel like the program was successful. If I did not accomplish that, I don't feel like the program was successful. Teaching the history of the Holocaust is not my goal in Yom HaShoah. And I wanna speak to people where they're at. So I did get rid of a lot of the ritual aspects of it because I did not find that it spoke to certainly not the younger generation and not even some of the older generation. Took a lot of heat for that from some of the other chevra who were upset. But we kind of designed a program where the lead up with drushos and all sorts of other, you know, initiatives that are going on, you know, kind of focused everyone on hearing a survivor testimony. And we made it very family friendly. We always looked for speakers who could appeal to as young of a population as possible. We're blessed that one of the main programming people in our shul and the president of our shul, and I think he would help other people with this also. He's one of the executive directors of the Jewish Heritage Museum, and he has access to a lot of survivors. And we've had survivor testimony every year. Sometimes it's been a speech. Sometimes it's been an interview or a conversation. We've mixed that up. I always introduce it with like a parak of Tehillim and a conversation, and just basically some very few remarks, but remarks pointed at the importance of experiencing this with the survivors. One of the things we do is we focus a lot on kids coming. There's question and answer always after the presentation. And the rule is that first kids get to ask questions. And it actually is very effective because kids ask the questions that everyone's thinking that the adults are intimidated to ask. And that creates a totally different dynamic with the survivor. They go into like great grandmother or great grandfather mode, and it becomes much more humanized, the whole thing. And then we open it up to adults so that they could stand up and pontificate on, you know, where they come from in Poland and why we should all think about that, you know, at this time. And beyond that, you know, that's basically our focus for Yom HaShoah.
Okay, and have you, but that's first of all, I absolutely love the idea of having the children ask the questions first. I'm thinking of the kid in my shul who would ask the question that none of us are willing to ask, and we would get
Yeah, the
exactly
kids are like, "What did you do all day when you were hiding? I don't understand. Like, weren't you bored? Like, weren't you like just like normal human questions that everyone in there is wondering that they don't usually get to because they don't, you know." And you know, we've had kids ask to see their number, and they'll go up on the Bima, and it's. I'm not saying I plant the questions, but one could if they wanted to plant them.
Have you begun to consider what experiencing testimony will look like as less survivors are available to speak, or not yet?
A little bit. We've had some conversation because Avrami, who works at the museum, has been doing a lot of work on this in the museum. Museums are thinking about this. And so creative ways that they're creating to interact with testimony more than just sitting in a room and watching a video screen. They've done some work on this. And they're doing more work on this with AI. So we've talked about, you know, the possibility of like an interaction between video clip testimony and children of the survivors on the stage. So a conversation that is not just like secondhand, but it's like a conversation about the experience of the family, but the living testimony on video of the family member. So not you come to the shul and watch a 45-minute video, but a 5-minute clip and then conversation with the next generation. And they'll talk about how you know they experienced those memories and they lived in their life. So that's one of the things that we're talking about.
Okay, wow, thank you. Aliza, what does your thinking on Yom HaShoah look like, and what does your programming look like?
Okay, so different from obviously Rabbi Glasser, we're focusing only on a specific age group, and similar to Rabbi Glasser, the idea is really for there to be a connection made for our students to understand to whatever degree they can and to respect and appreciate what happened during the Shoah, how we as a nation came out the other side and rebuilt and became who we are in that sense, and how it has driven us as a nation. And at the same time, to try to make it a little bit more personal, because when you just talk about it in the broad sense, it's you get something, but it's not really the what the kids can relate to. So in general, I would say, and it looks a little different each year, but we have three different elements to our Yom HaShoah programming. So just to set the stage a little bit, we ask our kids to come in wearing their white uniform shirt and their dark uniform pants or skirt, and everybody gets these stickers. The Histadrut sends it to us, that they say Yisker on it. And I'm mentioning it even though it's a very small detail, because it really, really helps sets the tone of the day for the solemnity and the respect of the day that we're trying to achieve. And it also engenders achdus in that sense, because we all are coming together, even in our appearance in that sense, to show our respect and our kavod to those who were lost and to those who survived. We have, after davening the morning, we will have a tekes, a ceremony, which is just junior high wide. Again, they do that in the high school also, but again, I'm going to focus on the junior high element. We light 6 yahrzeit candles. Often each one is lit in memory of either a group of people or a specific person. We actually have our 8th graders help us run this program, and they're the ones that are leading it and are the front faces for our students. And they will speak about someone which has been prepared ahead of time, and you know they've practiced beforehand. We have a moment of silence. We say Tehillim and Yizkor and Hakel Malei. We explain what those things are also, because not all of the students are familiar with it when they first come into our junior high. And then, depending on the year, we'll do a number of different things. Some years we will speak more specifically and share stories with, you know, excerpts from diaries of a particular child or man or woman that has gone through the Shoah. One year we watched a video about Sir Nicholas George Winton, who, for those of you who are familiar, he helped in the Kinder transport, bringing people into London, into England. So he spoke about him and kind of the idea of resiliency and bravery and standing up for what you believe. So each year we too try to find a theme that we want the kids to be able to focus on. And then we have breakout groups to discuss whatever it is that we have chosen for that year. So I say that's element one, the tech-esque type of learning. We also have tried very hard. We haven't been successful every single year, but we've tried to also have a survivor come in. We are a community that was established by survivors. The Jewish community in Cleveland are the remnants of it's called the Shevet HaPleta, of a community called Marmarush. So we have had many survivors who have been able to come and speak. Unfortunately, as that is becoming harder and harder, it's harder for them to come and speak with our students, and there just are not as many available anymore. That is becoming a little bit harder. What I will say is that I've always been really blown away by the respect that our students are able to show to the survivors when they are speaking, even when it is extremely difficult to understand them or to hear them or to know what they're saying because of the accent. And I honestly think that alone, that experience for our students alone, is worthwhile to be able to see that they have that in them and that, you know, these are not kids. Preteen kids are not generally very calm and quiet. So to have them be able to do such a thing in really an incredibly respectful manner has always been a very meaningful part for me. The last couple of years we've had survivors who have come to speak, well, obviously were much younger as they experienced the Shoah. So it's a very, very different experience. We have somebody who came to speak and she survived because she was hidden as a very young child with a German family. We had another man that came to us that was on the Kinder transport. And so he lived out the time of the Shoah in England. And so on the one hand, for the kids, that's not as jarring. And at the same time, I think it helps them understand that there was a different type of loss for all different types of people. And the impact was not only through the concentration camps and through the ghettos and what they're more familiar with, but the idea, this perspective that they're not really yet aware of, really opens them to a different form of loss and resiliency that they may not have associated ahead of time, you know, beforehand with the Shoah. In addition to that, in classes, there are two periods on Yom HaShoah for every grade band that is dedicated to a particular, and this remains the same every year. In sixth grade, they watch the film Paperclips and talk about it and think about how the idea that even kids can make such a huge difference. In seventh grade, we show them The Wave, which is also a very impactful video about peer pressure and really explains how this could have happened. And in eighth grade, we have, sounds a little bit strange, but let me just explain, a choose your own adventure where they read a page, we read it together as a class. And then as a class, they choose their two to three options at the end of every scenario. Do you choose to run away and hide in the forest? Do you choose to show that you're there? Do you choose to help the person and give your last piece of bread? Do you choose to keep the bread because you want to make sure that you can survive another day for your younger brother? Things like that. And the feedback we've gotten from the students is that it has been a very meaningful experience for them because they're reading it as kids their age, and they're faced with those decisions, and they're not actually faced with them, obviously, but they can kind of start to get into that mode to understand really, to the degree that they can, what happened in the Shoah. Emma, you're muted.
Thank you. I think even the point you made from the very beginning about having just the moment they know that they're wearing white shirts and black pants and like that's what, and they're wearing the sticker, I feel like it gives that sense of uniformity. And also, I feel like those are the things that the kids sometimes hold on to for a long time. That I know I remember those things from being in school, that it was, that was the day we had to come in black and white and we got the stickers. So I like that point specifically about like starting off from the Achdus, everyone doing that together. Thank you. Okay. And Ariana, what does your thinking about Yom HaShoah look like?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned before, definitely looks a little bit different when we're talking about younger children. That being said, and I'll go a little bit more into the specifics of how we handle it with our older elementary school kids, I would say that the entire school, you know, even though we're not talking about the Holocaust, you know, the events of the Holocaust with first, second, even third graders, to a great degree, we are setting the tone for the day of being one of, we kind of pick, usually, you know, we'll pick a midah or two, you know, inclusivity, being kind to others, being, you know, brave, things like this, just to kind of set the tone for the day. We'll do some challenges like, you know, how many people can you be, you know, kind to today, that type of thing. But with older students, we do have a tekes, and with fourth and fifth graders, we do also light 6 yahrzeit candles. We talk a little bit, very briefly, about the background of the day. We're talking kids who, you know, when we're talking about fourth and fifth graders, we also have to keep in mind that there are some parents who don't necessarily want all the details being known to their children. So we have to be very sensitive about that. And also one book that I'll mention that we've read as a group before, which is really fantastic for children, is The Tattooed Torah. If you don't know it, you could Google it, but it's basically taking you through the Holocaust with a Torah that was tattooed. So it kind of removes that, the trauma of it being a human, a child or an adult even, and kind of just like talks about Masorah and tradition and being able to save tradition and things like that, which is really a beautiful story and a really great springboard for conversation. But one thing that we did last year, which I'm really proud of and would really, you know, be happy to talk to anyone about it if they wanted to implement something like this, is we embarked on an entirely new Holocaust study with our fifth graders about righteous Gentiles, which starts with a conversation that we have with them. I'm going into classes next week into our fifth grade boys class, fifth grade girls class, and talking about the idea of being an upstander and a bystander, you know, what it means to be a righteous Gentile. That's the start of a unit that the fifth graders do, where they read Number of the Stars, which I'm sure many of us have read, probably in fifth grade as well. And the students read that and they split up into groups, and their groups focus on a specific righteous Gentile at that time. They do a deep dive into, with age-appropriate sources that we, you know, work with the teacher to kind of find and curate some research for them. And they then create these beautiful slideshows and like great presentations geared towards a righteous Gentile presentation that they do right around the week of Yom HaShoah for their parents. And this gave us the opportunity to, you know, I think like Aliza said as well, like when you give the kids that leadership role and they're owning the programming, and this goes across the board for whatever Chag you're programming for, if you give them that role and they own it, it empowers them. And then you have students learning from other students, which is so empowering and inspiring. So they do that. They plan for this for their parents, but on Yom HaShoah, which usually this year, I think the presentation falls out 2 days after Yom HaShoah. So on Yom HaShoah itself, they will do those presentations for their classmates, usually in third and fourth grade. We also had this amazing happy accident last year where one of the parents in the class told me that her husband's father was actually a convert and was a righteous Gentile in Denmark. And he came and the husband came and spoke to the kids, and the parent actually put together, are they from your community actually, Emma? Maybe.
Put together
their own, you know, presentation for the students, which was amazing. And then we're hoping that the Museum of Jewish Heritage also has an exhibit now called The Act of Courage, which is also geared towards children, that talks about this specific, you know, the Number of the Stars time period in Denmark, you know, in Denmark leaving, you know, during that time. So we do take, you know, we're very careful. It's definitely a sensitive topic with younger children, but we kind of try to focus on, you know, the Righteous Gentile topic really has a lot of relatable content for children, just standing up for your values and your beliefs and being an upstander and what does that mean? And that's kind of the direction we take with Yom HaShoah.
Amazing. First of all, that's crazy to happen to, like, to be a convert who comes from a Gentile. Yeah. Like, that's just crazy. But I very much appreciate, and that's something I've particularly noticed, and I'm sure you'll talk about it when it comes to Yom HaTzmaut, but as we've been talking about programming throughout the war, I think this is a topic that people have been thinking about of, is it all heavy and difficult? And we know the war has been one thing after another, but how do you give that over to kids? And do you give that over to kids? And I think that teaching about the righteous Gentiles is an idea of what I think a lot of us have had to do throughout the war, which is to pull out the positive aspects, the chesed that we can do, the role that we can play, the all of the positive side of what the role that we can play, the lessons that we can take from it, and not just focusing on necessarily like the tragedy of it. Very much. Yeah, Rabbi Glasser.
I just want to add very, very quickly, because I see there are people from shuls. This isn't a halachic statement, but I'm just sharing. Because our goal is to connect as many people as possible to the survivor testimony, we don't always do Yom HaShoah on Yom HaShoah. We do Yom HaShoah on the Sunday before or after. In fact, in Pesach, most people think Yom HaShoah is the Sunday after Pesach. They have no idea that there's a date in Nisan that has been ascribed to this. And I do that because, to me, it's more important to get more people in the room at this point, in terms of where we are. And then on the date of Yom HaShoah, I'll send out something from the shul, you know, or, you know, that's related to the day, but don't feel boxed in. I think the same, as opposed to Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaTzmaut, which I've never played with, you know, that we do Bo Bayom.
Right. I think it has a different ring if you do Yom HaZikaron a day late and then it's Yom HaTzmaut, you're thrown off. But Yom HaShoah for sure. Okay, so now let's transition. We're moving a week or so out to Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut. So the first question is going to be, do you think about both of these together? Are they always done in conjunction with one another? Is your thinking about programming separate for these 2 days? How do they then interplay with each other? So Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut, do you focus more on one than the other? And what does your programming look like? What aspects do you try to pull out from the day? How do you approach it? Let's start with Ariana this time.
Okay. So first of all, I think you have to think about them together for sure. Just like, you know, that feeling when you're in Israel and you go right from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaTzmaut. Like, we want the kids to understand that Yom HaTzmaut is happening because on the heels of Yom HaZikaron. I will say again, talking about younger children, our focus for Yom HaZikaron is usually on the pride we have in Tzahal and what it means to, you know, have the IDF, and what, you know, we definitely, again, with fourth and fifth grade, we do talk about fallen soldiers. There's a great website. I think it's called Honor Israel's Fallen or something of that sort, where you can actually go through and find fallen soldiers and dedicate your day of learning to one of those soldiers. So we've done things like that before. We definitely do letter writing and all, you know, to soldiers in all divisions. That being said, because of the tkufa that we find ourselves in right now, unfortunately, with everything going on in Israel, first of all, our school, and I'm sure most schools, are very heavily focused on Israel all the time. So thinking about how to separate out and really focus on Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut right now as a separate, you know, program, is it a separate program? Are we integrating it into our already very robust programming around Israel? So those are questions we have to think about. And also honoring fallen soldiers takes on a different meaning. Even children who are younger, they're in housing homes that are talking about, you know, the war right now. So definitely this year, you know, I think it will be a question for us, like, is that too heavy to really like talk about current soldiers? Is this something appropriate for our students? We haven't gotten there yet, but it's definitely going to be a question. We do towards the end of the day on Yom HaZikaron, we start our day always with something called morning greet. At morning greet, we always talk about that day. So we will mention Yom HaZikaron early in the morning. We'll say, you know, there will be letter writing or whatever we decide to do this year. And then we have a tekes at the end of the day and that what that tekes looks like. And it is hard to find, but we really look for videos that are age appropriate, that highlight the beauty and the inspiration that we can, you know, draw from Tzahal and from being, you know, from our Chayalim, without bombs in the background and talking about the heavy stuff. We do usually show a video of the siren in Israel because it's amazing for children to see that the entire country stops. There's many of them on YouTube. You just have to kind of sift through and make sure that you're finding the one that works for you. And that is usually what Yom HaZikaron looks like. In our school, we have happens to be our principal was a chayal at some point he served, and he usually it's he said is, says it's the only time of year that he puts back on his uniform, and he will put on his uniform and will sing HaTikvah. We have a shlicha in our school this year. She will come in talk a little bit about, you know, what Israel means to her. We have close relationships with our previous shlichim that have been here, so we've had years where we either get them on FaceTime, which is sometimes glitchy. So usually I find better to video in advance, but we do get the kids excited about seeing them. They usually go from being with us for a year to serving in the IZF, and just for them to see that those people that they know are actually serving is really inspiring and beautiful. And we always ask that question with younger children. You know, we want them to have a really positive feeling around Israel in general. And our fear is showing them, you know, Yom HaZikaron and what we are actually are, you know, commemorating could instill fear. And even more so, you know, with my own children sometimes, and I say, okay, God willing, you know, one day we'll live in Israel. And they're like, oh, but it's so scary to be a chayal. You know, that is not what we want for our students. So finding that balance definitely is challenging with younger children, but we kind of do this mix of it is a serious day, and we do honor our fallen soldiers. However, we also are so grateful for what our Chayalim do each and every day. And because of that, tomorrow we are going to head into this amazing day where we celebrate Medina Israel.
Okay, Aliza, what does your Yom HaZikaron look like?
So I'll start again that also everybody comes in their Navy uniform bottoms and white white uniform shirts. And again, we get the Yizkor stickers. So those are the two times a year that we wear them. And I was checking with one of my kids who's in high school now, and I'm like, can you just remind me, like, when do we, they're like, oh no, both days. We do it both days. Like, it's something that's very ingrained within them, that's part of what the celebration is. So I will say again, I mentioned earlier that in the evening, there is a major, major communal event that is run through our school. Our 10th graders are very heavily involved with it. And our amazing team of shlichim, we have 3 to 4 families of shlichim every year. And to B'nai Shirut in our community. It's a very, very Zionistic community. And we have many former families in our community that have made Aliyah. We have tons of alumni who are serving or who have served in the IDF or in Shirut Le'umi. So it's a very, very personal couple of days here, as it is for all of Am Yisrael, but almost everybody in our community knows somebody personally that has served, is serving, whatever it is. So they're very emotional days. There's just no other way to say it. They're very emotional and very positive. I think, like Ariana said, we focus a little bit more because our kids are older on the sacrifice and on the bravery and on the resilience of our chayalim, and also on the fact that we and our students have the ability to carry on the legacies of those who have fallen on behalf of our Amen Aretz. And it's a really powerful thing. I'll actually just share this because we never would have asked for this, but last year, one of our B'nai Shirut, her brother was killed, Yonatan Lober, Hashem Yikom Damo. I don't know if anybody recognizes his name. So his sister was a B'nai Shirut in our community. She went back home to sit Shiva and to be with her family. And then she came back. And it was an extremely powerful experience for our students to see her coming back in order to be able to continue to give as a member of Am Yisrael. And I think that, you know, in addition to his story and learning about him, that the idea that we keep on going, right? And that our chayalim are giving up their lives willingly so that we can be a thriving nation, Am Hashem, you know, being an Or LaGoyim. And I think that's really how we try to focus it. We are shlichim, actually, both this year and last year, a number of our shlichim were called back and left for months at a time where their wives and children stayed here. And again, every year we have shlichim. So even when it's not in the middle of the war, we have our shlichim to speak about what their experience was, what it means to them to serve in Tzahal. And just in general, I think that it's really this balance, like Ariana was saying, it's this balance of, yes, our students are old enough to recognize what sacrifice means and what bravery means and how we have to honor that legacy. And at the same time, always look for the helpers, right? We're looking for those people who can stand up and help and be those positive people who can carry on the Mesorah of those who have passed. And we also, in our tekes, I just forgot to mention this, we light one yahrzeit candle for that. And then we also have certain tefillot. We say the Kinat David, which is second parak of Shmuel Bet. We say Kal Malay and Yizkor, and then the tefillah L'shova Medina and Mishra Berach L'chayali Tzahal, which we actually do every day at Minyan. I mean, the Mishra Berach of Kriyas HaTorah days. But that's the focus that we take. And because there is this major event at night, a lot more focus is put there because all of our students participate in that as well.
And can I just ask one question about the night program? Does that, when you say it happens through your school, are you involved in that? And are you sort of... are you trying to sync your daytime program with what you know is happening at night, or are they two separate?
Not necessarily, because they're really different. I mean, our shlichim have their hands in both. So like we can check with them to make sure we don't want to repeat something or show the same video that they're planning on showing or play the same song, let's say. But our students are involved at the nighttime as well. We have a choir that there's one song that the entire first grade through 12th grade come together in the tekes to sing. The younger kids are not in the tekes. They're not there because it's not age appropriate, but they come in for that song. And that's a really something that they had been practicing for a couple of weeks prior to that. But they're separate.
Okay. And Rabbi Glasser, do you want to speak to Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut together, and then, or separate together, and then we'll jump back to Ariana and Aliza for more on Yom HaAtzmaut?
Sure, my pleasure. So one of the great benefits of the shuls is that we have amazing schools. And I do think that there is no shul that is able to give over the kind of immersive experience that the kids get, with all of its creative energy and all of its different layers, and all of its developmentally aligned, you know, that came through in all these conversations. So I think that I'm just speaking from our shul's perspective. I focus a little more on the adults. I'm not saying we don't have stuff for the kids. We do. But, you know, a lot of that, I think they are getting beautifully in school. Well, the advantage we have in the shul is we are all present for that transition, that Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaAtzmaut transition, which is very special and very meaningful. The shul obviously also has some of the halakhic different approaches. So I'm not, you know, I'm just telling you what we do in our shul. What we do in our shul is, so I want to add a layer of theme that I think is important that we do focus on in the shul, because I think it's important. I think all of the Am Yisrael pride is very critical, and that's definitely part of our messaging. I think all of the sacrifice of the soldiers is very critical, and that's absolutely part of our Yom HaZikaron messaging. But very core to this day, from my perspective in religious Zionism, especially in the context of the synagogue, is to bring in the hashgacha of all of this. And that people should go through this experience and emerge with a sense of appreciation of the miracle that is the state of Israel, the distance between the ingenuity and sacrifice and dedication that everyone has put in and what has come out, which is just extraordinarily miraculous, way beyond, you know, what we've put in, and the role of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of this. And, you know, that to me is very central messaging in the shul context. That's the goal in terms of my remarks. And that's why, in terms of how we integrate it, we have a hallel that we say without a bracha on Yom HaAtzmaut, on Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaAtzmaut night. And it's got a ton of singing, and it's very emotional. So basically we start with Yom HaZikaron. Some of the elements that we have with Yom HaZikaron are some of like the kind of like the liturgical pieces, the kelmales and these kinds of things. For years, even before the war, I would always have whoever in the shul had kids in the army, they would come up to the bima and they would say these tefillos, not me. I say them on Shabbos, but I think that it gave it an extra dimension. I've always had kids in the army that we've gotten videos. I've also made the mistake of trying to do it live. I've also gotten videos of kids in the army, and they address the shul directly. And that is a tremendous source of pride for the shul to see their kids, you know, up there and those different pieces. We do letter writing as people walk in. We always have a learning component during the year related to this. We usually finish Mishnayos related to soldiers. In the last 2 years with the war, our shul has connected with a family of a fallen soldier named the Sadon family, Paul Sadon, through the OU's Yachad LeNetzach program. His poster stands in our lobby. We've had his family in the shul. They've spoken. His father spoke in my shul for Eicha, before Eicha. It was very powerful. The mother spoke to the women of the shul on Tisha B'Av afternoon. And so I always, last year I had Mrs. Sadon record a message to the shul on Yom HaZikaron that I played. So I try to step out of it. As a Rav, like, I try to kind of like not get in the way of Yom HaZikaron. You know, like on Shabbos, I'll say something meaningful about Yom HaZikaron. I would like to give voice to the people who I think could kind of carry the messaging and the emotionality forward in a very like inspiring way. And that's why I hand it to the parents. And that's why, you know, the speaker is Hallel's mother. And, you know, that's why, you know, if we show a video, we'll show a short video. And then I really want the shul to emote this sense of connection. So we pick the right chazan, and then the shul knows if you're coming, we're singing, and there's a real sense of halav hodah. I don't manage the transition particularly well. That like Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaTzimut transition, I find in shul challenging. Like, we don't have a torch and we don't have a flag ceremony to like work with. Like, I find that part challenging. I would welcome insight in that. But yeah, so I try very much to get out of the way and to facilitate and empower other voices and other, you know, activities, and to make it about the tzibur, that they should feel this, you know, sense of overwhelming gratitude to the soldiers, to the families, to people in Israel, and to the Rabbono Shalom for this gift. And also that they should feel privileged to live in this generation and not take it for granted. That's a part of it also, you know, that I feel is very important in the messaging of Yom HaTzimut. And then afterwards, after the tefillah, there's a couple of awkward things at the end. I find the tefillah gets a little awkward at the end, but it's fine, you know, whatever we do. Everything's like, it's like Mosur, like everything gets ta'atikva and you're just kind of, you know. And then we go downstairs and there's like a nice, there's food and there's blue and white cookies and there's, you know, and it's Lebedik and there's some music. And that's basically what we do.
Can I ask one follow-up question?
Yeah, sure.
I know that you mentioned you live in a community where you are pretty much the modern Orthodox community within a broader, slightly more right to the community. How much do you think about the possibility of bringing in, as in knowing that you are likely the primary address for Yom HaAtzmaut activity in the community? Do you think about that in terms of more
global? I'm glad you asked that. For Yom HaShoah, I think about that a lot. Mm-hmm. I consider it my mission on Yom HaShoah to reach the right-wing part of the community and bring them in. And I do things to make it more matim for them. I do. I consider that part of our achrayus. Here, it's much more complicated because the more you do to accommodate those sensitivities, the more you a little bit dilute what you feel like you could potentially bring forward for the constituency that's in your shul. So I would not say that's a real consideration. Yom HaTzimut, this is a religious Zionist shul. There's like 400,000 minyanim that you could go to tonight that's not doing any of this. And, you know, okay, like this is what we're doing. We're proud that this is what we're doing. And, you know, that's the other thing I feel very strongly about with shuls. No equivocation. Figure out what you're comfortable with and do it and be proud of it and exude that pride. I do want to say, schools is totally different. Cheshbon. From the Rabbanim I talk to, almost across the board, attendance at Yom HaTzimut and Yom HaZikaron is going down. Almost across the board. I'm sure there are exceptions of communities that are just so, you know, flag-waving Zionistic that it's not true. But I think we could safely say many, many shuls and the younger generation, even the millennials, and certainly after that, a lot of the kind of like ritualized pieces of this do not speak to them at all. And that's continuing to be a real challenge, you know, to kind of manufacture an experience that feels authentic and traditional and real, but at the same time resonates with a new generation, you know. In Teaneck, they have moved this out of the shuls into the park with drone shows and concerts and lots of creative stuff. And, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, it got harder and harder to pull people into that space. Some of that is that the schools are booming. Like the kids are getting it so stark in the schools that it kind of like, you know, it's almost like, okay, then we go to school and we get a blue and white cookie, you know, but when you go to school, your principal's wearing a uniform, like, you know, so I think this is a project, but anyway, that's our approach.
Thank you. Aliza, just just because we're at the edge of time, what does Yom HaAtzmaut look like? What's your primary focus of the day?
Okay, so in the morning, we actually have a beautiful unity parade where three different schools come together. The streets are closed off, and we do what I like to refer to as our own little mini Israel Day parade in Cleveland. And thank God we have the support of the Beachwood Police and our Federation security, so we're able to do it in a safe way. And it's really exciting. It's a beautiful way to see Achdus across certain spectrum of the community, not everybody. And then we end at our school, and then every one of those schools does their Dag Lanut dance, which in each of the schools, their B'nai Shirut have helped them, so that our sixth graders are involved with that. Of course, we have a falafel lunch, and then in the afternoon, we do programming. It's usually very interactive, different stations, very experiential. Sometimes it focuses on different locations in Israel. Sometimes it focuses on different cultures in Israel, different inventions of Israel. Just each year we choose something else to highlight. And it's just a fun, they're all crazy at that point anyway, after all the programming. So this is a fun way and hopefully meaningful experience for them to close out the Yom HaAtzmaut festivities.
We usually in our shul, we go to different locations in Israel. And now when you just said different inventions of Israel, like that's very cool. I like that one. Okay. And Ariana, what is your primary focus? What does Yom HaAtzmaut look like?
Okay. So I'll just add, because we also do, you know, the whole full day, all the stations, usually based on location, gone soccer, we play soccer, you know, we go to the Technion, we build Rube Goldberg's, we, you know, play with sand and do art and all the stuff, you know, and I could, you know, very typical. But I think that one aspect that we also really try to bring in with a lot of our programming is the chesed piece. And, you know, it's getting harder to come up with creative chesed ideas when it comes to Israel, because we really spent the entire year last year really dedicating so much of our time to that. But I do think it's so important. We talk a lot about, you know, we'll do something on especially with older kids, on different tzedakah organizations that, you know, that focus on Israel, and, you know, why it's so important to give tzedakah to those organizations. We also talk about, you know, different chesed opportunities we can do that are more hands-on, where we get the kids involved. So for example, we'll have leading up to Yom HaAtzmaut, we'll have a collection for Army Base. We'll have the kids, you know, get in there and, you know, pack the packages, the duffel bags. We'll do, last year we did, you know, we stuffed bears for displaced children, and we actually had members of parents in our school go and deliver them and show us pictures, you know, things like that. So I think the biggest piece here, and this is, you know, the challenge and the beauty of having so much focus on Israel the past year plus, is that you kind of have to set it apart and say, it's Kulo Israel all the time at JEC, but at the same time, like, this is a day of complete celebration. We're really highlighting, you know, the fun aspects and the beauty of the inventions in Israel. Like Aliza mentioned, you know, we show kids like all the things that were invented in Israel, and they're blown away, you know. I joke, like, our shul had a trivia night, and one of the questions was like, an invention, a vegetable that was, you know, created in Israel. And I'm like, cherry tomato. And they're like, why do you know that? I said, you know, you have to make all like the trivia games for Israel for Yom HaAtzmaut, and you learn all this stuff. But we do things like
that digital really, you know, dough?
Yeah.
We had the same question last night on Saturday.
I'm like, I know all the answers because I know the trivia game.
We had the exact same question.
Yeah. But I do think that like making the children, you know, just like bringing Israel to them, where it's just so hands-on and so relatable. We did, not for Yom HaAtzmaut specifically, but it was so beautiful last year. We reinvented our school logo to make an Israel logo. And in addition to wearing blue and white on Yom HaAtzmaut, we also gave them the opportunity of like wearing these new you know, white sweatshirts with the Israel logo, and just showing them the connection between us and our brothers and sisters in Israel is just like anything we could do to kind of bring that in. But the day itself is fully from the day we start, you know, with Hallel and the tekkis outside. And you said like we couldn't plan for when Yom Ha'atzmaut is, but Baruch Hashem, it's in warm weather because generally speaking, it's not raining here, hopefully, on Yom Ha'atzmaut. So we get to use, you know, the outdoors. We have Zaglanut. We have full day of stations and everything is centered around Israel. We make the pizzas. We do the Israeli salad. We found the knives that the kids can actually use and cut with that are safe. And generally speaking, like the whole day is just fun and interactive, you know, with the sprinkling of the chesed in there.
And one of the miracles of the day is I guarantee it is the only time of year that my kids will eat a cucumber. Maybe it's because they cut it with the special knives, but
yeah, you got to get the special knives. So
yeah, there's no cucumbers aside from the Yom Ha'atzmaut Israeli salad ever. Okay, one last lightning round. If there's one point that you could give over for implementation, again, it's a crazy time of year, all of these things going on. If there's one tip or trick for implementing any of these programs that you could share with the crowd, what would it be? Aliza, you want to start?
Embrace the chaos, plan as much as you can, and know that things are going to go wrong and go with the flow.
Great. Rabbi Glasser.
Find a meshuggah ledover who wants to be involved in this, that will carry it as much as you will, and make sure the tech is set up properly. You could kill your moment. You could kill the climax of your emotional moment because someone didn't plug the right thing into the right thing and the sound's coming out of some, you know, make sure the tech is, if you're using tech, use it well.
And Ariana.
Definitely the flexibility and going with the flow and modeling that positivity, because when you have so many people involved, especially when you're working with like tons of, you know, people in a school, you have to model the positivity because something is going to go wrong. And if you laugh about it, then people really will follow suit. But I would say also, if you're working with a team of people that you need to get on board, you need their buy-in. So anything you can talk to them about in advance, communication is so important. As early as we have the details, we talk to our teachers and we say, does this work for you? Is this a program you want to run? You're not comfortable with that? No problem. You can do this one. Does that work better for you? Wherever we can give them the opportunity to kind of choose and also have some say in the matter, I find it goes a lot smoother.
Amazing. Okay, I'm going to give one moment. If anyone has any questions, to direct them to the chat. We have time for one, maybe two quick questions.
Other than I'm not 74.
Okay. I have one. Oh, let's see. We have an amazing work. I have one last question for Rabbi Glasser. Have you ever done this, or has your shul ever had distinct women's programming for any of the yoms, or these are totally community days?
These are totally community days. I don't remember doing anything specific. Want everyone together? Everyone together. Yeah.
Okay.
As someone asked in the chat how long the shul program runs, probably about an hour. And then we go downstairs and I look just like my father.
Okay. Thank you so much to all of our presenters. This was really insightful. I was taking notes the whole time. I have some great ideas that I'm taking away from tonight. And thank you to everyone who participated. If you look in the chat and you see all of the places that you are all from, it's really incredible to see how many of you were willing to take time on a night in February, so far before the Yoms, to start putting our brain power to this to create the most meaningful experience for your communities. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you again to Adina Meyerfeld for supporting me on the Zoom end, and to Rebbetzin Dr. Adina Schmidman, who joined us for the program tonight. She is the director of the Women's Initiative and really the brain and the power behind all of the incredible programs that you see from the Women's Initiative. So thank you, Dr. Rebbetzin Schmidman, for being here.
And I'm a big Nach Yomi fan, so I just have to say that. Thank you, Dr. Schmidman.
And a huge thank you to Emma Katz for a super, super job of moving the program along, getting so much information and a lot of energy and positivity around these programs. And thank you, Lisa, Ariana, and Rabbi Glasser.
Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you all for joining.